is my song.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge with a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host. This is MJ Network. MJ standing for my sister, Marcia Joyce. And today we have a really, really, really exciting show. We have author, actor, producer, singer, songwriter, consultant, and so much more, an inspiration to everyone. We have the author of Mary, the Mary Tyler Moore Story, which is a phenomenal book, and everybody should really get a copy very soon. Herbie J. Pilato is here. Good morning. How are you? And I'm so glad you're here.
Good morning, Fran. I'm so delighted to be here with you.
I'm glad, too. So I have read just about every book you've written. And when I saw this on Facebook, of course, I couldn't resist it. Because Mary Tyler Moore, I don't think she realized the first song for her from the show is Who Can Turn the World On With Her Smile. I don't think she realized that she turned everybody on with her smile. She was amazing. So you did Elizabeth Montgomery, short bios of female and male stars. Why did you decide to do Mary Tyler Moore? And what research did you have to do? Because this book was really fantastic.
Well, thank you. Excuse me. Thank you for all of that. I decided to do Mary because I wanted to continue the thread or the theme that I had started with Elizabeth Montgomery, a female actress from the 60s who still had a career beyond their most iconic role. So, you know, Elizabeth Montgomery did hundreds of TV show appearances before, during and after Bewitched, and also stage and film performances, as did Mary Tyler Moore. And Elizabeth broke away from the stereotype of playing Samantha with a really so many groundbreaking TV movies like The Legend of Lizzie Borden and The Case of Rape. And as did Mary, she broke the stereotype of, you know, Mary Richards and Laura Petrie from the Dick Van Dyke Show, and she went on to play, you know, in amazing roles like First You Cry, which is the real-life story of Betty Rowland, journalist Betty Rowland, who had breast cancer, and that was her first TV movie in 1978. And then, of course, in 1980, she delivered an Oscar-winning performance in Ordinary People as a very different character of Beth Jarrett, who was not such a nice mother to her son, who ultimately, you know, committed suicide. And of course, the tragic irony there is that, you know, even though Mary Tyler Moore's son did not commit suicide in real life, he did accidentally die, and he shot himself with a gunshot because he collected guns. So she was dealing with that off screen as just after that movie was released. But beyond that, both Elizabeth Montgomery and Mary Tyler Moore had demanding fathers who really did not want them to pursue careers in the entertainment industry, and they didn't get along with their dads, not that much.
Yeah, I know. That was really sad. They're kind of controlling and wanted her to follow in their footsteps, and sometimes you have to be independent enough to realize where your goals are.
Yeah.
So she was loved by everyone, yet on the outside, you didn't see what was down deep on the inside. She had very low self-esteem and self-love. Why was that? Part of it, I think, was because of how she grew up. And the other part of it was that I don't think she realized what a great person she was. And, of course, if my sister were listening to the show, she loved the fact that Mary Tyler Moore loved to dance, because she loved to dance, too. So why was she so sort of down on herself?
Well, you know, it's a very good question with probably a very complicated answer. In general, artists, You know, writers, actors, dancers, singers, anyone with any kind of creativity in that kind of realm, you know, it's not, they're not always constantly happy, because art is created many times from unhappy situations. Now, that isn't to say that there aren't joyfully born authors and writers and actors and singers and dancers, but more times than not, great art is created from pain. With regard to Mary and her self-esteem, I think certainly it didn't help that her mother and father, her mother, first of all, was an alcoholic, and both of her parents never really supported her early on, her aspirations early on. But she was also sexually abused as a kid, you know, by a neighbor in their building where they grew up in New York, or where she was raised in New York. So I don't think she ever really got the therapy, you know, in those days, you didn't get therapy for those things, that she really needed until later in life. And in the meantime, she became an alcoholic to deal with her issues. Mm-hmm. Then she was stricken with diabetes. You know, it was not really a happy life. And yet, in the midst of all of that, she was this really incredible person who did so much for animals and the Diabetes Foundation. She wasn't necessarily, you know, not the nicest person in the world off screen, but she had reason. She had a lot that she was dealing with, but she was a good person. She was a good person. You don't be... you don't do the things that she did for others and charity and animals and be a bad person. She was just very, very sad and very complicated. And you wouldn't have known it, you know, because she brought so much love to the world. Now, the kind of really crazy thing is that she was so beautiful that she felt that she wasn't. And she constantly had this obsession with plastic surgery, which I give her so many props. She addressed as honestly as she could in her book, in her books. But she kept on, even when she knew it was not the healthiest and right thing to do, which you're really not supposed to do. You're not supposed to have plastic surgery when you're an alcoholic, or any kind of surgery, really. And the diabetes thing didn't help it either. But she went ahead and she kept on doing it, and it became very obsessive. So there was a lot going on there, you know, a lot.
I think that she did, she looked in the mirror and didn't really see who she was. She didn't really see that she was beautiful, that she was kind. She just saw the things that other people tried to make her feel put down as far as dancing and as far as being who she wanted to be. And the sad part is that abuse, well, that's one of the things that I dealt with when I was teaching. And if I saw something that wasn't right, I didn't care if I was wrong. And I was never wrong, and I reported it. It's scary. So you look at her face on the cover of the book, and you wonder if she was here, if she would actually see the beauty behind the smile. I often wonder.
She had that beautiful smile. She had that charisma. And again, she not just played around with her her cheekbones, those gorgeous little natural puffy cheekbones, she got rid of those, and then she kept on having, you know, constant teeth implants. I think she had like 3 different teeth implants over time. So it's just, you know, just so sad.
I know.
But I do not want this to be a downer, because still she brought so much love to the world. She truly did. And it's so funny, because people would approach her and say, oh, I wish I could be like Mary Richards on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And she would say, yeah, so do I. So she was so cool that way. She was so honest with herself and with others as much as she could be, you know, and I admire that.
I love her as Laura Petrie with Dick Van Dyke. And reading that section of the book about how he felt about her to start with, and he wasn't really sure if she was really right for the role. Yeah, she was. And they sort of, like, had a connection in there. And I guess if they both weren't married, there would have been more of a connection, and got the feeling. So she got the role as Laura Petrie, and how did she see herself as that? Of course, I still watch it. I still watch her.
Well, that was very, very, I love that show. Dick Van Dyke is just, that's one of my favorite shows of all time. Oh, yeah, he's great. Well, it's interesting what happened there, because she originally was supposed to be just like, you know, the wife at home in those days. And Rose Marie, who played Sally Rogers on the Dick Van Dyke Show, was supposed to be the female star of the show. But Mary, at the time when she started Dick Van Dyke, she was married to Richard Meeker, and that marriage did not really work out. He wanted a stay-at-home wife, essentially, and he was a wonderful guy, and he was a regular guy. He wasn't in the industry or anything like that. But they got married too young, and then Grant Tinker, who was an executive, an ad executive who worked on the Dick Van Dyke Show, he met Mary, they fell in love, and she got divorced, and they got married, and then Grant Tinker was the one who pushed to have Mary as for a more central role on the Dick Van Dyke Show. And when the Dick Van Dyke Show ended, yes, Carl Reiner wanted to end it. And yes, Dick Van Dyke had a movie career that was, you know, blossoming with, like, you know, Mary Poppins and all that. But it was Mary who really forced the end of the show. I think the others would have gone on, but Mary wanted to go on to a film career that was encouraged by her husband, Grant. But the issue was Grant knew television, but he didn't know movies. And as a result, they made, you know, decisions here in several not-so-wonderful movies, including Change of Habit, which Mary played a nun, and she opposite Elvis Presley as a surgeon. So there you go.
Well, she and Rose Marie were not exactly friends, I don't think. And I love Maury Amsterdam. I love Rose Marie. I thought she was hilarious. Yeah. But you could even tell sometimes in some of the episodes that she and Mary Tyler Moore are never really that close or in the same room or that close together, whereas Maury Amsterdam was different. But my favorite guy was Mel. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, Mel was great. Richard Deacon.
I love Mel.
Yeah. No,
yeah,
Mary, actually, you're absolutely right. There was tension, and they eventually, Rosemary and Mary came to peace when they finally did the Dick Van Dyke Show Revisited, which to me is not such a wonderful film, which was a reunion they did years later. But Mary definitely had an affection for Maury Amsterdam. They got along well, always. But yeah, Mary and Rose, and Rose admitted this too. I'm not saying anything that Rosemary didn't admit. She wrote in her book, and she made that very clear in the documentary from a few years ago that there was tension between she and Mary.
Did you ever meet her, Mary? Did you ever met her? Did you?
I did not. I knew Elizabeth Montgomery. I had met her several times for the books, it was difficult for me to write about Elizabeth objectively because she was complicated too. But I did.
Mm-hmm.
With Mary, it really wasn't any easier because I admired her. But in both cases, or in any of my books, you know, my MO is, as the founder of the Classic TV Preservation Society, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the positive influence of classic TV shows, I'm not about to write some kind of horrible expose in any salacious way about the shows or the people that I love. It's not my MO. But as a journalist, I still have a job to do to tell the truth, and I always try to tell the truth with as much dignity as I can and with the highest respect for and the highest regard for all those concerned. You know, I would never, sit out to write just a hurtful, mean-spirited biography, which, you know, is okay for some writers, but that's just not me.
It's not me either, because I get criticized a lot because I won't write a negative review for an author. Because my thing is that it's my opinion, and if somebody doesn't like someone's book, that's okay. But I might look at it differently, and if I think a book is not really worth 4.5-5 stars and really is below par, I just won't review it. Or I'll just write something, and then the person will say to me, "Did you like it?" And go, "Well, it was okay." I will never pan somebody's work because, you know, you work really hard, and people work really hard. And
well,
that's
a lot of integrity there, and you're putting a lot of good vibes out there, Fran, with taking that perspective. I mean, especially in print. I mean, that is really kind of an amazing and courageous perspective. And thank you. I feel honored that you chose to review mine because that meant you liked it.
Oh, if I didn't like it, you'd know. I loved it. I mean, it's funny because there's a fellow that comes into my hairdresser, And he borrowed, but it's not giving back the ones on Elizabeth Montgomery. He says, you're not getting them back. These are too good. I go, like, you're not getting the one on Mary Tyler Moore. You're going to have to buy this one yourself because it's going on my shelf. And I meant it. Because besides the fact that what's really great about this book, everyone, is there's an album of beautiful pictures of some of my favorite people. And watching Mary Tyler Moore, of course I love Ed Asner, but my favorite character is Betty White. I'm sorry, I love Betty White. And I think she's like that in real life too, maybe. She just says whatever is on her mind.
I don't know if she's as loose as Sue Ann Nivens, but Betty definitely says what's on her mind. But I do want to make clear that this book is not just about the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
So it's about all I want. When I wrote this book, I wanted to write the first major, in-depth, fully objective life and career story of Mary beyond and including, but beyond, before and during and after the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show, because she did so many things that has never been ever fully documented, and this book documents it all.
I don't think people realize how much she did. I mean, I knew she did a lot of other things, but I'm sitting here reading it and I'm going like, what? But you know what really got me? I have to ask this question because the book is in front of me. Everything is in front of me. How did you get the interviews that she did? The one with David Susskind was really, you get to know her. New York Times writer John O'Connor reviewed her films. How did you get all that information and permission to put this in this fantastic book? Because that's what brought it to life, because when you get to hear Mary's voice and how she feels about something, which is great. And then I'm looking at day one, the first day of the shoot for the reunion. I love Georgia Engel, too, and Gavin McLeod. How did you get all of that in here and get permission to put it in here so that it's like an extra book in a book, seriously?
Yeah. Well, it's, first of all, I have all new interviews and all new commentary from Ed Asner, Gavin McLeod, Karen Sharp Kramer, who was an actress who was up for the role of Laura and who worked with Mary years before the Dick Van Dyke Show. And she then went on to marry, you know, Stanley Kramer, the great director of movies like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Then I interviewed Larry Matthews from the Dick Van Dyke Show, who played Little Richie, and Carol Channing.
Yeah.
Worked with Mary on Thoroughly Modern Millie. Bill Persky was one of the writers of the Dick Van Dyke Show and who became one of Mary's closest friends. All of those people and more. And then I went and on the internet and did research on all the films that she did, all the TV shows that she did, and then went on YouTube where there's amazing footage of the interviews that she did on David Susskind and other shows like that. And I just, you know, brought it all together in pieces from here and there. And I referenced everything in the bibliography and all the footnotes. And I made sure to seek the permissions necessary from various documentaries that Mary did or that were about Mary. It was a long, long process, but I wanted to work that hard because I did not want this to be a fly-by-night book. I wanted this to be a heavy-duty, real down and, you know, clean and dirty book about a full scope about the big picture of who she was. So it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, and I do think it is my best book. I think Twitch has some flaws in it. And I was a younger writer at the time, even just 8 years ago. And so whatever I didn't maybe perfect with Twitch, I believe I perfected with Mary in the way I tell a story and whatnot.
Well, you did. And you know what? I'm looking at the pictures. I love looking at the pictures. I was dancing as in dance recital, and I was the biggest klutz in America. No, seriously. And my mother made me take dancing lessons because I'm 107 pounds. I was 190. And she said to me, you're going to lose weight dancing. My sister was a professional dancer and a singer. She did everything, not me. And I'm looking at her picture, mid-teen performance of Mary in a dance recital with her classmates at the Ward Sister School of Dancing in Los Angeles. It's brings back such memories. And those tutus, that costume was beautiful. I had to dance with a mop on my head. It was so sad. And then I'm looking at one with maracas. I mean, I would never picture her dancing the cha-cha-cha with maracas in this picture.
Well, see, that particular photo, well, first of all, we all have our talents. You know, Fran, we can't all be singers and dancers. I can't count. I can't play basketball. You know, we have things we can't do, too. So don't be so hard on yourself.
No, I can play basketball, believe it or not. I was good, but dancing, I was like, if when Lucia Nestle stomped the grapes, that was Fran. What can I say?
That's funny. That's funny. No, the cha-cha-cha picture in the book is an image of one of the modeling shots that Mary would do early in her career for Latin album covers. She would pose for Latin album covers very generically. No, she wasn't a star at the time. She was just a model. So that was one of the many album covers that she did. So I thought I'd pick out the best one and use that representative.
Well, my favorite other picture, I love this picture. I'm going crazy here. This is so cool. Well, I know, how did her real son feel about her before he died? Because it said that she wasn't that attentive, that Larry Matthews thought that she was the greatest thing on this planet. She was totally different.
Yeah, and again, Mary, I got to give her props again. She admitted that she was not the best mother in the whole world. You know, she wanted to be a star. She wanted to be, not a housewife, and being a mother was not number one to her. And she wished later on, certainly, that she could have done things differently. And yes, on TV, she was a wonderful mom to Richie, played by Larry Matthews, and she certainly was beloved by the cast and the crew of the Dick Van Dyke Show and all her shows. But, you know, sometimes when you belong to so many, as stars do, you have issues with dealing with the intimacy of one-on-one relationships, which Mary had an issue with. I mean, she didn't have really that many close female friends, which is another topic I bring up in the book. Betty White, Beverly Sanders, yes. Beverly Sanders was one of her good friends. She was an actress. But Bill Persky ultimately was a good male friend to her. But she had issues with female for whatever reason. And, you know, which is shocking, too, because she's so beloved as this female independent icon, you know, independent female icon, where she inspired so many women to have careers and take control of their own lives and this and that. But she didn't have many female friends, so go figure.
What about Chloe? I love Chloe Leachman and Valerie Harper. And because of her. Yeah, how did they really feel about her? Chloe Leachman is hilarious. Valerie Harper is just normally naturally funny.
One of the most naturally funny, naturally talented actresses ever on the planet. I think their relationship was okay. It wasn't very close. I think Mary had a great deal of respect for Cloris and vice versa. But with Valerie Harper, Mary was best friends with Valerie. But you know what? Just like in any close relationship, brother, sister, close friends, husband, wife, you're going to have your ups and downs. And Valerie and Mary did have their ups and downs. And I talk about that in the book as well. Didn't mean they hated each other. It just meant that they had their ups and downs, because when you spend so much time with somebody and you have such a strong friendship with someone over 30, 40 years, you know, you're going to have your ups and downs. I think one of the issues in particular is that when Mary and Rhoda, the TV movie that they did years later, which really was supposed to be a weekly series, and then it ended up becoming a pilot, a two-hour movie that just didn't sell as another series. I believe that Valerie wanted a little bit more control over that film because they were in partnership on that movie, producing-wise, and Mary wanted more control. So I think there was some issue there. But they loved each other. They were dear, dear friends till the day Mary passed away.
That was such a sad day. So sad. Very 80 sad. Years old, wow. And I guarantee if she was still here, she'd be doing more animal advocacy and more diabetes. And,
absolutely. And the sad thing is, Fran, that I think had she not had the extensive plastic surgery, it would have helped her to be stronger to fight against that diabetes. That's how I feel. Look, anytime anybody goes under the knife, you lose brain cells, it weakens your body, you put your body through trauma. Okay, I don't care how much preparation you got, your body is traumatized in surgery. When you have diabetes and your body is already traumatized by the diabetes, having surgery and then elective surgery again and again and again and again is not. And I'm not against plastic surgery. I'm not against hair transplant. I might get one day myself, okay?
Now you don't need one.
What's that?
You don't need one. You don't need one.
Oh. But you still, you know, it's the obsessiveness. I wouldn't be obsessive about it. Maybe I'll even get a nose job. Who knows? But I'm not going to be obsessive about it. It's the Michael Jackson way of doing plastic surgery is the concern here, you know?
I agree with you. You know, it's the anesthesia, too, because my mom was fine until she had this surgery in California, which they needed to do to save her life.
Right.
But when you're under for 24 hours, and then you have another surgery, and that's what caused her Alzheimer's, they said.
That's right.
It wasn't, it did. It definitely did. And I think when I had, you know, when I had any kind of surgery, I don't even want to go to the dentist. I'll take Novocaine anytime. I mean, because of what happened to her. And I'm sharp as a tack. They can't stand that, really. But you got to be careful.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying all of this happens every day to everybody with surgery. But when you're older, my mom had two knee surgeries, heart surgery, and she was wasn't the same each time she came out
That
surgery. She was older, so she was in her 70s, okay? So certainly that contributes to it as well. And when, you know, having surgery when you're 20 years old and you're a kid on the football field and you need knee surgery, okay, you got more brain cells to lose, okay? But when you're in your 70s and you're having elective surgery left and right on your face and you got diabetes, sorry, I can't support that.
No, I agree. Did she really go on Rosie O'Donnell? And how did she find Rosie O'Donnell? She's a trip and a half, that one.
Oh,
that
they adore each other. Rosie,
really?
You know, I have to remember, she was a huge classic TV fan. I mean, Mary was on the Rosie O'Donnell show all the time. And this is right around the time that Mary was coming to peace with being Laura Petrie and Mary Richards, you know, because for a very, very long time, and this happens a lot with 60 stars in particular and 70 stars, they want to get away from what they're known for the most. And they feel that it's very, you know, they're stereotyped by their roles. Elizabeth felt this way, too, about Bewitched and Samantha. But by the 90s and after Nick at Night, it became a cool thing for stars to be known for the most memorable roles. And Mary says, like, well, you know, just like Elizabeth said before she died, okay, I'm going to be Samantha. People still love me 40 years later, so I guess it's okay. And, you know, Mary says, well, people still love Laura Petrie and Mary Richards, so I'm going to have to deal with this. And she dealt with it, and she accepted it, and she finally came to peace with it, which is why she did the Mary and Rhoda reunion movie and why she did the Dick Van Dyke show, Revisited movie. She wouldn't have done those
without that. Yeah, but did she ever really want to think that in real life that she wanted to be Mary Richards or Laura Petrie? Did she ever wonder, am I Mary Tyler Moore, or am I one of those, or am I somebody else?
Well, she was closer to Mary Richards than she was to Laura Petrie, but she never really fully lived as independently as Mary Richards did. I mean, she was always married up until, like, you know, 1981 when she divorced Grant Tinker. And then she was, like, single for about 2 years before she met and fell in love with her third husband, the incredible Dr. Robert Levine, who was so dedicated to Mary.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they loved each other. He was so loyal to her for 30 years. And he was younger than her. She was like the first cougar. I think he was like 15, 18 years younger than Mary.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at his picture right here. She had good taste,
yeah,
though. I'm going to tell you. She seriously had good taste. But I have to say, my dad sold his store, and he wound up working in a store, I won't say which one, in Manhattan. And Dr. Robert Levine was a customer in the store.
Oh.
That my dad worked in a cleaning store all his life, and he managed this store when he retired from his store. And Dr. Robert Levine did come in. I'm not sure if Mary came in. It's possible. He met Sherman Hemsley, Paul Benedict. He met a lot of stars from Classic TV because they were all down there. The only thing they forgot to do was give me their autograph, which is not good. But, yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. What kind of store was this?
It was a cleaning store on 101st and Amsterdam Avenue.
Oh,
and
cool.
He was the manager of the store, and not the greatest people that he worked for. I won't say why on the air, but yeah. Robert.
Well, now,
Lincoln,
did Sherman Hemsley ever come in? Because Sherman Hemsley played the Jefferson.
Yeah, Sherman Hemsley came in. Paul Benedict came in.
Oh, now that is really cool because, of course, the Jeffersons owned a dry cleaning store on the show. So there was Sherman Hemsley coming right into a real-life dry cleaning store. I love that.
Yeah. Well, my grandfather owned Arista Cleaners on 181st Street and Mohegan Avenue. And when everybody got married, he bought everybody a store. So we had like a whole bunch of stores, like six of them.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah, my grandfather owned them. Yeah, they had no choice. And I had to work in one. I had to work in them on Saturday. When I was 10 years old, I went to work and cleaned and pressed and learned the business of a cleaning store. Then they made me an educator, which was a good deal. best thing I ever did. Yeah, my mother said that. But if you wanted extra money, you had to work in the cleaning store. And Joan Collins sent her planner or her maid or whatever it was, Jackie Collins, all of them were customers in the store. And they loved the work that my father did, you know, whatever. It was a fortune. I don't know. When he worked in the Bronx, it was a whole lot cheaper and just as good. But, you know, sometimes they think where it is, it matters. So Robert Levine was really, he stuck by her no matter what. He did.
Yeah.
But how did you get the interview with David Susskind? That was really quite compelling.
Well, that was taken
voice
from the internet. I mean, all this incredible stuff is on the internet. And, and you know, if you go, and so instead of sitting on the internet and surfing and looking for these videos and these interviews and this or that and watching and taking hours and hours and hours, I took all of that, the best pieces of all of her interviews that she did, and I put them all together in this book so that people don't have to just sit there and watch, you know, for hours and hours and hours and shows. They can just read the book and see the concise version of it. So it was all, it's all there. It's out there. And that's a neat thing, too, because it wasn't just the print interviews, you know, like the articles about the movies that she did and stuff, where she gave interviews to newspapers and magazines, but these video interviews that she gave. There was so much conversation and commentary that she talked and addressed that has never been put into a book in any concise, full picture way. So that's why, that's another reason why I'm so proud of this book.
Well, you should be, because it took a lot of work to write this book, I can tell you that. And I'm looking at another picture. See, I keep the book in front of me. On page 301, Mary continued to reconnect with the cast members of Dick Van Dyke and the Mary Tyler Moore sitcoms, and she posed on the set of the Dick Van Dyke Show Revisited. How come they did that? And what about the reunion that they made? That must have been exciting, the reunion,
yes,
all the stars together.
Well, there were several different reunions. There was the Mary Tyler Moore reunion clip special that she did a couple of those, where she just sat down as Mary Tyler Moore with the cast of the Mary Tyler Moore Show and talked about the show. Then she did Marion Rota, which was only she and Valerie Harper. Lou Grant, Ed Asner was supposed to be in it, but I guess it didn't work. And then I think Lars Leachman wanted to be in it, but that didn't work either. But she did the Dick Van Dyke Show clip specials too, where they sat down and talked about the Dick Van Dyke Show. And then they actually did the Dick Van Dyke Show Revisited, which was a story of playing, where they played the characters of Rob and Laura. That happened after they won some kind of icon award on the TV Land Awards, where the show was, you know, given all these accolades. And somebody says, hey, well, will you ever do a reunion movie, and Rosemarie got up to the podium and goes, "Yes, we will." And Mary was not too happy about that because she was not at peace with Laura Petrie. And she goes, "No, we won't." Well, optical flip, 1 year later, there they are both doing the show. I think by that time in 2004, which is when they did revisit it, you know, Mary really wasn't working a lot. There weren't a lot of roles for her. So this came about. Carl Reiner approached her. He created the original show, and he wrote the reunion. And there you go. But the very, very, very interesting thing about the Dick Van Dyke Show Revisited, in my opinion, is that while Dick Van Dyke was playing Rob Petrie, and Jerry Van Dyke was playing Stacy Petrie, Rob's brother, and Rosemarie was playing Sally Rogers, and Carl Reiner was playing Alan Brady, and Larry Matthews came back and he was playing Little Richie, Mary Tyler Moore was playing Mary Richards. Laura Petrie. Mary, in my opinion, could not find the voice of Laura Petrie. So she was still stuck in Mary Richards' persona. And it's very interesting to see on the Dick Van Dyke Show Revisited, Rob Petrie married to Mary Richards and not Laura Petrie. Very interesting.
I wonder, I'm writing notes as you're speaking, because of the fact that she grew up and everybody wanted her to be something other than what she was, then the independence of being Mary Richards was what she really wanted to be. That's what it sounds like to me.
That's interesting. That is very interesting. I think, yes, she did really want to be more like Mary Richards than Laura Petrie. But I think that because she had not performed Laura in so many years and had really kind of, not a resentment towards the role, but she wasn't as warm to it as she was to Mary Richards, she just couldn't find the voice. But yes, I agree with you, Fran. She was more like Mary Richards than Laura, and over the years, she just, you know, whoever Laura was gone, If she even played her on for 5 years, that was it. With Mary Richards, she was closer to that. That's quite right. I agree with that.
I think a lot of people would like to be like Mary Richards, because there are a lot of, you know, when I was three, my mother told me I was going to be an educator. I didn't have a choice. She just said, "You're very smart. You read, and you're going to read books, and you're going to do this and that." And you know, when you think about it back in retrospect, you say to yourself, "Did she do the right thing for me?" Oh yeah, without a doubt. I guess she saw something in me that I didn't know when I was three, that I was going to be an educator.
What a wonderful profession it is! What an important profession it is to shape young minds or any kind of mind. God bless you for your work.
I loved it for 36 years, and to be honest, I must have done something right because my students are on Facebook, and they keep reminding me, "You're the best reading person in the world. I wouldn't know how to do anything without you." So I said, okay, this is great. So, you know, sometimes you just don't know what kind of an impact you made, and maybe Mary didn't know basically the kind of impact she made on everybody, too. I mean, because the last line of the song says, "You're going to make it after all." I wonder if she realized she made it in so many different ways. I think she did in a lot of different ways.
She took the last part of that last line, and that's what she named her own one of her first memoirs, her first memoir, which was After All. Mm-hmm. So that's what she called it. So I think she believed that she did make it. I mean, certainly not just as an actress, and even though she always wanted to be a dancer, that never really, or a movie musical star, that never really happened because by the time she grew, she matured as an actress, those kinds of movies weren't being made anymore. But at the same time, on the Dick Van Dyke Show, she and Dick Van Dyke did so many wonderful musical numbers on that show. She really did become a movie musical star in a small screen way. But I think she never really and I think this is for all actors and all performers. You never really feel you've done every role you've ever wanted to do before you leave this world, and there's always one more role you want to do. So that's, again, goes back to the artistic thing, which is never being satisfied. You know, that's how artists are. You know, we're never satisfied. I'm never satisfied with my work. You know, no matter how good and great I think it is, or I try to make it, I'm never fully satisfied with it. I'm never even satisfied with a picture. You know, that could have been better, or that could have been better. So that's the perfectionist thing that is part of the artist, but when it's taken to the extreme, again, mm-hmm. like it did with Mary and her plastic surgery, it's not healthy, physically, emotionally, or psychologically.
I wonder sometimes if my mother was a perfectionist too, and she demanded that everything that everybody does was perfect, because if it wasn't, you're going to write it over until it was, which is fine. But as far as appearance and stuff, you had to go and look right, but she would never tell me to go and fix my face or do anything like that. But I wonder if Mary, in her own way, just never felt that she made herself perfect enough for herself. And that's why, or maybe because of her father and her mother not accepting she wanted to do dance, which is nothing wrong with doing dance. It's great. Or who she wanted to be, that she kept changing who she was until maybe she was going to please them. Did she ever please them? Did they ever say to her, Mary Tyler Moore, I'm so proud of you?
I think the only compliment like that her father gave her was, and Carl Reiner had talked about this, at her senior ball or something, he said, mm-hmm. You're a very handsome woman. And that's when
she
was 18. A handsome woman. Okay. So that's the most affectionate the father ever got. But when, of course, Mary became a star, of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, they were in the audience, and, you know, she came to peace with them eventually. But absolutely, when you're a little person, and the two mm-hmm. most important people in your life are your mother and father, and you do not receive the unconditional love and support and encouragement that a mother and father are supposed to give you, and then mix that in with being sexually abused, which throws you off in a whole other angle as a little person, you can see what led to her lack of self-esteem, her lack of self-love, and all those issues that she ultimately just had that kept on just feeding each other.
Let me just remind everybody, this is the best show ever for February, people. But wait till you see March. My list is long. I can't believe it. Tuesday, Barry Eisler will be here with the Killer Collective. On Thursday, New York Times author Philip Margolin, The Perfect Alibi. On the 11th, Brian Friedman, The Crooked Street. The author of Forgotten Hours. On the 14th, New York Times author Andrea Kane. On the 19th, on the 21st, Lee Matthew Goldberg, The Desire Card. I accidentally told him I was reading his book and it was the wrong Lee Goldberg, but I'm glad I did because his book is fantastic. So the real Lee Goldberg is coming on the 26th with The Killer Thriller. And to end March, the guy that's on number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list, the author of Mission Critical, Mark Meany, agreed to do my show, and that's just March. I won't even get into April, but I get an awe of all the people and all the wonderful people like yourself that want to be on my show and showcase their work, which is fantastic. So, Mary Tyler.
Wow, you sound like what a wonderful bunch of people you're having on there. It's fantastic, Fran.
I'm impressed because some of them actually asked to be on the show, and I go like, huh? Mm-hmm. I think the most impressive one was last week Douglas Preston, a publisher, and he would like to do an interview with you about Verses of the Dead, and I was like, I waited till the day, I didn't even broadcast it because I wanted to make sure that the show really happened. He's so nice. It was really amazing. And I have to say, MJ Network is in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, who passed away, and my sister told me I was becoming a couch potato, and she's the reason why I do this. So somewhere up there, she's smiling down on me, telling me I'm doing a great job, and she would tell me, speak slowly, make sure you have the right questions, and if you don't know, keep them out. I'll read them while you're at it, while you're listening. So,
well, you
said
far you've been speaking great, and you've had all the right questions, so thank you, and thank your sister. God bless her.
So what would Dick Van Dyke, we have about 10 more minutes, what would Dick Van Dyke say if he could talk about Mary Tyler Moore? How did he really feel about her? I know he was hesitant at first.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
How did Dick Van Dyke really feel about Mary Tyler Moore?
Well, I think that they had a great affection for each other. I mean, years later, they admitted that they both had kind of like this little crush on each other while doing the Dick Van Dyke Show. I think he, you know, he felt she was too young for him, but it ultimately, I mean, on the series to play his wife, but it certainly worked. They had a great chemistry. Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore are two of the most amazingly likable, talented people in the industry ever. After the Dick Van Dyke Show, Dick Van Dyke never had to do anything ever again, but he did. After the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Mary never had to do anything ever again, but she did. And, you know, she just, you know, they both catapulted with to further heights with different projects. But, and Dick Van Dyke has admitted this as well, he was an alcoholic, and Mary Tyler Moore had issues with alcoholism during the Dick Van Dyke Show. Nobody knew it because they were still professionals. You know, they never came drunk on the set, or they never were all drank alcohol during work hours. It was always after. Nobody knew it. So they stayed professional, and they did their jobs as what they would refer to as functioning alcoholics. So there you go. But as far as getting along with each other, they did care about each other a great deal. Interestingly, however, Dick Van Dyke was never asked to be a guest on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Jerry Van Dyke was, but Mary never asked him, or maybe she did, and he said, no, I'm not sure. All I know is Dick Van Dyke had never made a guest appearance on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which would have been really, really cool. But I think by that time, again, Mary wanted to distance herself from Laura Petrie. You know, Dick Van Dyke was over. She was now doing her own thing. And she wouldn't come to peace with all of that, as I said before, until much, much, many years later. When she did the Mary Tyler Moore Hour, which was one of her variety shows that failed, Dick Van Dyke did a guest appearance on that. But I think she was, at that point, desperate to get some ratings. You did go to Dick at that point, but he was never a guest star on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which was sad, I think.
Well, my other favorite character, when he died, it was so sad, was Ted Knight and Georgia Engel. I couldn't believe, he must have been a brilliant man to play somebody that wasn't so smart.
Well,
Mary
adored him, absolutely adored him, and Ted Knight was really the big comic presence on male comic presence on that show. It was very, very sad when he died, but he wasn't happy in around the first or second year. He approached the producers and he's like, I really don't want to play Ted anymore. I'm like, you know, an idiot, and people are just going to think I'm an idiot. And he had some issues with that. And Ed Asner told me that. And Ed Asner was very good for Ed Asner, Ted Knight, and Gavin McLeod were all very close friends, and they remained close. Ed and Gavin are still close today. So there was no real rivalry on that show between the males and the females, but there was competition, but healthy and positive competition, nothing evil.
I love Gavin McLeod, and he played on The Love Boat, too, and he was great also.
One of the sweetest guys on the planet.
He was, I know. And Ed Asner, is Ed Asner really like he was as Mr. Grant, or is he different in real life?
Ed Asner is, the guy has never stopped working since the day he started acting. You know, he's always on the go. He's always doing something. What a gruff, incredible human being he is. He's another advocate for, you know, so many different social causes. But one of the things that sticks out of my mind about Ed Asner, and I told him this every time I see him, God bless him, is that years and years ago when he was doing the Mary Tyler Moore Show, he was still driving his Cutlass Supreme. He didn't get a Mercedes. He didn't get a BMW. He was just still driving his Cutlass Supreme to work. And I thought, wow, that is so cool. That is a man of integrity. Didn't feel he had – look, there's nothing wrong with driving a Mercedes. Again, nothing wrong with driving a BMW. I just thought it was pretty cool that he wasn't as affected by his position, you know, as the usual individual would be. So he came from a working-class family, and he never lost that. Mm-hmm. And he's as down-to-earth as all get out. And he's always working. Always working.
That's he still is working. I know that. He's like a never-ready battery. So, and what about Carl Reiner? How did he deal with Mary? Carl Reiner's still around, too.
Carl Reiner loved Mary. He was the one who said, you know, she had auditioned for the Danny Thomas show, and Danny says, mm-hmm. honey, with that small little nose, there's no way that you would be seen as my daughter. That was the role she was interviewing for, auditioning for, was his daughter on the Make Room for Danny show. Terry Jackson, who was leaving. But when she walked in Carl Reiner's office for the Dick Van Dyke show, he, like, put his hand on her head, said, don't move, walked her down the hall to Danny Thomas and Sheldon Leonard, who were his producing partners on the Dick Van Dyke show, and said, we found Laura. This is Laura. With a little ping in her voice. And Karen Kramer, who I said had interviewed for the role of Laura before, she knew that when she heard Mary's voice that Mary Tyler Moore was going to be Laura Petrie. Nobody could say, oh, Rob, like Mary Tyler Moore could.
I know. It was just so perfect. She was so natural, though. I mean, it didn't even look like she was acting. It just looked like she was Laura Petrie. I mean,
The first few episodes, she's a little stiff, which is natural because, you know, in every new show, you're still trying to find your voice or the rhythm of a show. And Mary's Laura's a little bit more refined, and Rob refers to her as Lori, not so much Laura. But by the end of the first season, and certainly by the beginning of the second season, man, there's that Laura voice is there, that natural acting is there, and it's just wonderful.
Well, before we end, I have to ask about two more people. See, I do watch these Fogans people. I don't watch that much television because I'm too busy reading too many books, and I've got 20 on my chair that are staring at me and go, are you going to do me today? I go, no, you're going to wait because this is more important. Jerry Paris and Ann Gilbert that played the Next Door Neighbors, How did she get along with them? Because she was funny.
Ann Gilbert,
she was a riot.
To me, she's got one of the funniest lines in the whole show, Dick Van Dyke, where she's singing, and it's just amazing. Mary got along with Ann Morgan Gilbert very well, and she got along with Jerry Paris well. The issue with Jerry Paris is that he couldn't remember his lines. He had a hard time remembering his lines, which ultimately is why he turned to directing. He ended up directing many of those episodes of Dick Van Dyke, and then Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, which were produced by Gary Marsh, started out as a writer on the Dick Van Dyke show. But part of the reason later on that everybody learned why Jerry couldn't remember his lines, I think, is that he ultimately passed away due to a brain tumor. So there might have been some issue brain tumor starting to slowly grow and affect his memory even as early as the Dick Van Dyke show.
That's sad. But before we end, will you tell everybody what's next, who you're going to do next, and where can we find out more about Herbie?
Well, I would like to continue the female 1960s icon biography, so I'm trying to think of what top TV female that I'd like to profile in the next book. But certainly you can purchase, and I'm working on TV shows and films as well, but you can purchase any one of my books on Amazon.com. Mary Tyler Moore is not yet on Barnes & Noble, but it is on Amazon in hardcover, paperback, and Kindle, or you can go directly to my website at herbiejpilato.com, or you can email me hjpilato@yahoo.com and order personally signed copy of any of my books, certainly Mary, and we do that through PayPal, and we can work out the details when you email me, or you can go to classictvpreserve.org. A donation to the Classic TV Preservation Society, which the main function is my TV and self-esteem seminars that I give to schools, colleges, and community centers and business centers and senior centers, who I love. I love the seniors. And that's one of my my wonderful joys in life is that I get to do those seminars. So
that is fantastic. That is fantastic. I think that's why when I retired from teaching, I had retired early. I was younger, and my mom had Alzheimer's, so I had no choice. So I decided to review books. And the funny story is that my sister dared me to review a cookbook, and I don't know one end of the stove from another. And I reviewed a cookbook. Yeah, and they're still laughing at my review because it was hilarious. And it went viral because somebody – yeah, I have no idea what to do with the cookbook. My husband cooks. If I didn't, I probably would be less than 107 pounds. And the last time I did make something, I self-cleaned it because I turned the oven on the wrong way, seriously. And the meatloaf turned gray. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not joking. It's hilarious. And my sister tried to teach me how to make chicken parmesan. And at the end of giving me the recipe, she said it would be helpful if you go and buy the chicken. But what she didn't tell me, and this is truth, is that they have processed breadcrumbs. Because I had no idea what you did with it, so I used Wonder Bread. And I won't tell you how that came out.
You know, it's so funny. I mean, Wonder Bread is probably, I don't know. I mean, I was never a fan of it in recent years, but I loved it as a kid.
I don't need Wonder Bread.
I just bought my first loaf of Wonder Bread last week for the first time in 40 years. And I'm like, there's nothing wrong with this. I love this, you know. So it's got low potassium, which is good for me because I can't have too much potassium.
Well, I eat very little of anything. And I love bananas, and that's my potassium, and I only eat half of one. That's it.
Good for you.
I don't eat a lot of anything. Yeah, well, considering last year I was like 150, and now I'm 107 pounds, and I watch what I eat, which is great. Cause being skinny is fun. You know, you walk into a store. This is true. When you're overweight, and they'll look at you and they'll go, "I don't have any clothes for you." This is a true story. And I go, that's okay, because I wasn't buying it for me. I was buying it for somebody else. And the girl said to me, well, you really should go next door. I said, well, you know what? I could lose the weight, and you could lose your job for being disrespectful.
Wow.
And
good for you.
She did, because I did report it. I said, you know what? Oh, well, I don't like any kind of discrimination at all.
That's horrible. Especially, she actually said that?
Yeah, she said to me. I walked into this store, and I was buying something for my sister-in-law for her birthday because my sister-in-law is married to my brother and she deserves a medal, seriously. And I was buying her a birthday present, and she said to me, why are you here? You're overweight. You don't belong here. I said, that might be the case. I said, no, I was going to buy something for my sister-in-law, but I'll go into the store next door where they won't judge me by my weight or what I look like. And I looked fine. And I had just lost 20 pounds, and I said, but you can't lose the ugly in your voice and the nastiness in your attitude. I said, so we'll just take care of it. And I called the manager. I said, you know what? Everybody to me is equal and the same, and I don't care what you look like or whatever. If you're a nice person, it doesn't matter if you weigh 500 pounds. It doesn't really matter. All I care about, and when they ask you, you tell them how old you are, which I never do. I lie a lot. And I do. What's your date of birth? 9990, something like that. I don't have them. I'm saying, well, you know, you have to tell us. I said, well, you can figure it out from my address and my phone number, and I don't tell them. I won't tell them because I said, you know what? Because what happens if you tell the person the truth, they talk to you like you're an idiot, and I'm not old. I just crack up laughing. And this girl this morning said, what's your date of birth? I said, you know, it's funny. This is the only time that my memory gets lapsed. I'm really sorry. I can't tell you that. I mean, really. What could I say?
Well, you sound like you're such a together person, and you're spreading love wherever you go and spreading justice wherever you go. I love that.
Yeah, I do, because you know what? That's what I was brought up to do. My dad was like that. My dad was the most straightforward, non-prejudiced person in the entire world, and he taught me to be like me. And I said, you know what? Yeah, and he was also my partner. We used to get in trouble together. I miss him. He would call me up and go, this is what your mother doesn't have to know, and this is what I need you to do for the cleaning store. And I go, and I would do it, and 5 minutes later she would call me, what did he ask you to do? I said, nothing. What are you talking about? He told on me. He couldn't keep a secret from her if he tried. It was hilarious. But I want to thank you a million times. And, of course, when you write the next one, I want the first copy.
Oh, you're a sweetheart, man. You're always so supportive. Just a wonderful human being all the way around. The world's a better place because of you, Fran.
Thank you. And it was a better place because of you and Mary Tyler Moore. You did make it after all. You made so many people happy. And if she was here, she would definitely know that everybody still loves her because her show's still on and you can't stop watching. And you know what I did before I watched, before they did the show? I watched a couple on YouTube. So I get the right feel of Mary Tyler Moore. But everybody, it's a beautiful day outside. It's freezing here, but I don't care. We're going to have a great day. Herbie, thank you so much. Everybody, have a great day, and bye.
See you later, friend. Thank you.